Welcome to Royally Screwed. My name is Chris Shearer, and it's my honor to take you on a tour through some of history's greatest, worst, and bizarre rulers. It's time for another installment of Were They Great, where we explore the reigns of rulers who were given the title The Great in order to determine if they really deserved that honor. That's right, it's two in a row for Were They Great, because I felt like this episode's figure acted as a good part two to the previous episode I did over Alfred the Great, a medieval Anglo-Saxon king in southern England. But who exactly are we talking about this week? His name is Canute, and he's also a king that ruled over England, as well as Denmark and Norway. Canute's reign over these three nations, altogether known as either the Anglo-Scandinavian Empire or the North Sea Empire, represented one of Scandinavia's last great efforts of the Viking Age before that period of history came to an end shortly thereafter. Although the Scandinavian-descended Normans who conquered England would surely say otherwise. He represented a Scandinavian influence that was not like that of the Vikings we've seen in previous episodes of this show. For starters, Canute was actually a Christian, being among the first couple generations in a post-Christianized Scandinavia, or at least the very beginnings of the process. But being a king over three different nations is surely a tough feat. After all, those three nations would not be part of a single empire for very long. How did Canute actually rule over them? How did he actually come to rule them? And how does Canute shape up as a fellow the Great compared to Alfred the Great, the man who would seemingly be his antithesis as far as England is concerned? It wasn't too long after Alfred kicked the bucket that Canute managed to take over the island of Britain, so it's a very easy path of history to go from one great to another. That's what we'll be covering in the background history lesson. So, without further ado, let's begin the story. We're going back in time to the end of Viking Age Europe in the early 11th century in Canute of the North Sea Empire. Was he great? In the background history lesson for this episode, we'll be doing exactly as I said, tracing English history from Alfred the Great to the rise of Canute. So, in case you didn't listen to the last episode over Alfred, something I think you really should do anyways, let's take a step back into the history of the island of Britain. The various tribes and people who made up the group we refer to as the Anglo-Saxons started coming over to Britain in the 5th and 6th centuries following Rome's exit from the island. They mainly came from Germany but also arrived from parts of Denmark and the Netherlands. Soon enough, the Anglo-Saxons became the dominant group on the island, displacing the Romano-British people into the further reaches of Western Britain, meaning Wales and the southwestern region known as Cornwall, as well as some areas further north in Scotland. The Saxons had it good for a few centuries. By the early 9th century, the nation we now call England was divided up into seven kingdoms. Going from mostly north to south, these kingdoms were Northumbria, Mercia, East Anglia, Wessex, Essex, Sussex, and Kent. By the time Alfred came to power in the late 9th century, Wessex had come to control Essex, Sussex, and Kent. But a little before then, in 793, the Vikings arrived with their raid on the island of Lindisfarne in northeastern England. From there, many more raids would ensue as the Vikings sought to both raid and colonize the island of Britain. Enter King Alfred of Wessex. Alfred sought to unify the Saxon people under one united banner, which would eventually come true with the formation of England. Unfortunately, Alfred would die before he could see that come true. He also had to put up with several massive Scandinavian forces invading the lands he controlled. In the 880s, after defeating the Viking leader Guthrum and forcing him to convert to Christianity, Alfred and the leader of the Danes, here meaning Scandinavians, carved the Saxon kingdoms in half. The Saxons would retain hold of Wessex and the other kingdoms it held sway over, as well as most of Mercia. The Danes would control Northumbria, East Anglia, and the rest of Mercia. This deal seems to actually work out pretty well despite the fact it flew in the face of Alfred's desires. Anyways, Alfred would eventually also come to gain power in Mercia when he had his daughter married to the Lord of the Kingdom. When Alfred died in 899, his son Edward took over. Edward would maintain control of his father's kingdoms and reconquer East Anglia for the Saxons. When he died in 924, his son Æthelstan would become king and eventually retake Northumbria. However, the city of York and several of its surrounding cities would strive to remain in Danish hands. It would take a couple more kings, namely two of Æthelstan's younger half-brothers, to finally dispel the final Danish king of York in 954. 8 kings after Alfred, but only 4 generations later, King Æthelred II was crowned in 978. In the 980s, after a few decades of relative peace, the Danes returned to England with their attempts at conquest. After a crushing defeat in 991, Æthelred had to start paying tribute to the Danes. But let's now cross over from England to Scandinavia. In 958, Harold Bluetooth became king of Denmark. Yes, he was called Bluetooth, and yes, that is where we get the name for the wireless technology. Harold more or less unified Denmark and also introduced Christianity into his nation. Harold was succeeded by his son, Svein, also called Svein Forkbeard, who may have actually deposed Harold. For nearly a decade, from 1002 to 1012, Svein led raids in England. These raids probably began in response to the St. Brice's Day massacre. On the 13th of November, 1002, King Æthelred of England ordered a mass slaughter of Danes in England after he was advised that a Danish army would come, conquer England, and convert his people to their pagan religion. Well, there wasn't really any reason to believe this, especially considering Denmark was also technically a Christian nation at this point. Unfortunately for Æthelred, Svein's sister and brother-in-law were two of the Danes killed that day. In 1013, Svein finally managed to drive out Æthelred, forcing the English king to flee to Normandy in France. Svein would then also marry Æthelred's wife. By the time he died the following year, Svein had come to control Denmark, Norway, and England. But in the wake of his death, Æthelred returned to England to seize control. Denmark went to Svein's son, King Harold II. Norway was in turn seized by a king named Olaf. But Svein had another son who was denied kingship in the wake of his father's death. Despite the clamors of the Danes in England for a king from their own people, the English nobles in Wessex had other plans, aka the aforementioned restoration of Æthelred. So despite the fact that Svein's son Canute had fought hard alongside his father to conquer England, he would once more have to fight to gain his perceived birthright. Obviously, first and foremost, we'll look at how Canute came to rule over England and what he did with the nation while leading it. Well, when Svein Forkbeard died, it seemed as if Canute really was going to become the new king of England. However, England at the time, despite having kind of fallen into subservience to the Danes, was still mostly made up of Anglo-Saxons who occupied most of the other positions in the government, meaning they stepped in to vote for a return to an English king ruling England. In order to take England, Canute would need an army. He found that army in a coalition of forces offered to him by his brother, Harold II of Denmark, and a relative named Boleslaw, who happened to be ruling as the Duke of Poland. Forces from Norway and Sweden were thought to also have joined the fray on the side of Canute. Likewise, there were actually Danish forces still in England who were willing to give the aspiring king their swords for him. This help mainly came from the Jomsvikings, an elite group of Scandinavian mercenaries under the leadership of a man known as Thorkel the Tall. Thorkel had originally served under Æthelred but decided to throw his stock behind Canute when the latter began amassing his conquering force. When Canute arrived in England in 1015, King Æthelred was seriously ill and not really in any position to fight or lead his nation. This would prove to be a massive boon to Canute's army, as the English were not really able to rally behind a figurehead like the Scandinavians. This allowed Canute to easily sail into Wessex and take the region as his own. After more fighting, the Ealdorman of Mercia, a man named Edric Streona, submitted to the Scandinavian army. This left just the forces of Ethelred combined with the forces of Anglo-Saxon Northumbria. But, like I said, Ethelred was in no shape to lead. His army would come to be controlled by his son, Edmund. When Canute's army met with that of Edmund in early 1016, the English prince soon found himself outmatched when most of his soldiers fled from the unstoppable conquering force. Throughout the rest of 1016, England was thrown into a strange predicament. Ethelred was now dead, so England needed a new king. Since most of England had already fallen to his army, the General Council of Leaders of England, known as the Witan, voted to crown Canute as the king of the nation. However, a small faction held up in London that was still loyal to the line of the House of Wessex voted for and crowned Edmund as the new king of England. Canute then decided to capture London in order to bring all of England under his control. Edmund escaped from the city just before the arrival of the combined Anglo-Scandinavian army and sought reinforcements in Wessex. While he was gone, Canute laid siege to the city. Now, as a reminder for those of you who listened to last episode and just new info for those who didn't, London was not the capital of England at this time. It would become the capital in 50 years, but for right now, the capital of England was the city of Winchester. That being said, London was still a very powerful city. For a while, Canute's army laid siege while Edmund's reinforcing army tried to fend them off. In October of 1016, Canute and Edmund finally decided to call things off. The pair signed a treaty that divided England between the two men. Edmund would rule everything south of the River Thames, leaving Canute everything in the much larger northern section. If Edmund died without siring an heir, the entirety of England would come under the control of Canute. Well, just a few weeks later, Edmund died from injuries sustained during all of the fighting. So, all of England did in fact come under the control of King Canute. Now that he has achieved his supposed birthright, how did Canute rule? Well, things were a far cry from the fears of Ethelred and his Witan. There was no mass slaughter of Christians that paved the way for England to become a Nordic country. For starters, Canute had already been a baptized Christian by the time he went about conquering England. Second, he would rule England as it had been ruled for centuries at that point, mostly keeping the traditional ealdorman system in place. The only major difference was that the term ealdorman was replaced by the name Earl, coming from the Old Norse political position Jarl, which maybe you'll recognize if you played any of the dozen or so releases of the video game Skyrim. While many English nobles retained power, Canute gave the Earldom of Northumbria to Thorkel the Tall and the Earldom of East Anglia to a Norwegian nobleman named Eric. Canute would keep the Earldom of Wessex for himself. Earldoms were semi-fluid existences, being composed of smaller administrative regions called shires. If Canute wanted, he could switch the rule of different shires between different earls. The power of the earls was especially important when the king was off island, as he would eventually come to do a bit more later when he became the king of other nations. He also sought to emulate the laws of the English kings who ruled before him. Specifically, he was interested in the Law of Edgar, referring to King Edgar, who ruled from 959 to 979. Like Alfred decades before, Edgar created a code of law that was meant to be all-encompassing in terms of secular life, religious life, and punishment for crimes involving both facets. Unlike Alfred's code of laws, aka the Doom Book, which more or less tried to create a Christian nation that upheld the divine right of the king in a way that didn't necessarily make for the most coherent legal code, Edgar's law code is usually considered much more praiseworthy in construction. But one of the most important factors, especially for a guy like Canute, was that it upheld the right for the Dane Law, the portion of England centered around the city of York that was mostly occupied by Scandinavians, to have its own constitution. Canute himself would end up compiling his own laws into a legal code, which also contained laws by the likes of both Alfred the Great and Edgar. Canute is generally remembered as a great and wise king of England, and this is mostly due to the fact that his identity was perfect for the era he lived in. As a Christian, he supported the church. Priests were the history keepers of the medieval era, so obviously they would write favorably about a man who followed their faith. And also, it really helped that Canute was Danish. As I mentioned before, Viking raids had started again in earnest a few decades before Canute took power. Heck, Canute himself took part in these raids for probably about a decade before he became king. But once he became king, he quickly got to work squashing any attempted incursions from Scandinavian raiders. This became increasingly easier when he also became the king of those people. Under his rule, England achieved relative peace, at least as far as Vikings were concerned, and would mostly retain that peace until the Norman invasion of 1066. In 1018, Canute's brother, King Harald II of Denmark, died. Little is known about the life of Harald II, but it's safe to assume that he died without siring an heir considering what happened next. Upon hearing the death of his brother, Canute sailed from England to his nation of birth to assert his right to the throne as king. His claim was accepted, and now Canute was king of two nations. But how did Canute deal with his new position as king of Denmark? Well, he didn't really do all that much with this newfound power besides add "and king of Denmark" to his royal title. By 1020, Canute had already returned to England to rule as its proper king. In order to assert his rule, though, Canute named his brother-in-law, Ulf Thorgilsson, as Jarl and Regent of Denmark. The only time I really found that Canute returned to Denmark was from 1026 to 1027, when Jarl Ulf attempted a coup and aligned himself with the Norwegians and Swedes. Canute led an army and came out victorious, making him the most powerful ruler in all of Scandinavia. On Christmas of 1026, Canute had Ulf killed, further cementing his position as King of Denmark. Then, after a brief visit to Rome, Canute returned to England. I think it is truly bizarre that Canute just didn't really seem to care about Denmark. Like, maybe he did, but no one cared enough to write about it as much as his time in England. After all, he did spend most of his time as king and emperor in Britain. But Denmark was his homeland. It was where Svein Forkbeard was first king. You'd think that would hold some sort of appeal, right? Apparently not. So let's move on to Canute's final conquest, Norway. In 1027, Canute, in a written correspondence, proclaimed himself the king of the Norwegians and some of the Swedes. Just one problem there. Canute was not actually the king of Norway. He certainly had Norwegians under his command back in England, but that does not make one king of their homeland. Especially when the Norwegians very much had a king, Olaf II, who I had mentioned before. It seems that Canute was either under a misapprehension of his victories in 1026, or was just proclaiming his intentions to actually bring Norway under his control. Starting in 1027, Danish representatives sailed up and down the coast of Norway, attempting to persuade the local nobility to rebel against King Olaf. Norway had been weakened by Canute's victories over the previous year, and it seemed that the locals were willing to throw their hats into Canute's ring since he had proven to be a successful leader and conqueror. In 1028, Canute finally led his full-blown invasion of Norway. With just 50 ships, he sailed up from England, through Denmark, and up the Norwegian coast. He would stop every so often to assemble the local leaders and make them swear loyalty to him. Almost all of them agreed, and those that Canute thought were less trustworthy were replaced with people Canute felt would actually support him. When he finally reached the city of Trondheim, the then capital of Norway, Knut was met by the region's Grand Assembly and proclaimed the new King of Norway. Olaf II was driven into exile, either in modern-day Belarus, Ukraine, or Western Russia. However, since Knut was a busy guy in England, he left Norway in the hands of a man named Hakon Eriksson, the son of a former ally. Hakon ruled as regent until he disappeared at sea in 1029. After Hakon's death, or just disappearance, I don't know, Olaf returned from exile in an attempt to regain control. However, the Norwegians rose against the former king and killed him. This did, though, leave a power vacuum in Norway that Knut needed to deal with. In order to keep things under his control, in 1030, Knut placed his third kingdom under the control of his first wife, Algifu, and their son, Svein. Algifu was originally from the English kingdom of Mercia, and Svein almost certainly was born and raised in England too. This flew in the face of the system Knut had set up and promised to the Norwegians, where the locals would get to rule over the day-to-day while Knut was in England. Things got much worse when Algifu and Svein proceeded to craft new laws and significantly raise taxes that forced the Norwegians into subservience. According to a poem from the court poet Sigvatar Thordarson, Algifu's time long will the young man remember, when they at home ate ox's food and, like the goats, ate rind. Constant rebellions arose across Norway, further emboldened by two separate men. The first was a man named Trygvi, who claimed to be the son of King Olaf II. In 1033, Trygvi arrived in Norway and claimed the throne was rightfully his. Svein ended up defeating Trygvi's fleet in a naval battle, settling that dispute. Unfortunately, later that year, a couple Norwegian nobles decided they'd had enough of Knut's wife and son. They went off to find the son of Olaf II, Magnus. In 1034, Magnus returned to Norway and proclaimed his desire to see Svein and Algifu dethroned. Unfortunately for Knut's family, the locals sided with Magnus. It should also be noted that Magnus was only 11 years old at this time. Svein was defeated in battle and would die from his wounds in either late 1035 or early 1036. But with Svein gone and Magnus on the throne, Knut lost control over Norway. His empire was beginning to collapse, though luckily he died before it completely disappeared. Now that we've covered Knut's varying successes and failures across his three kingdoms, let's talk about the other majorly important facet of Knut's life, Christianity. As I've mentioned before, Knut was a Christian before he ever became king. According to a Yelling Stone erected by King Harald Bluetooth, a Yelling Stone being one of the two massive stones in the town of Yelling inscribed with words from the king, Bluetooth himself claimed to have turned Denmark into a Christian nation. When he was baptized, Knut was given the Christian name Lambert. In order to prove his allegiance to the Christian church in the early days of his kingship, he had all the churches and monasteries that had been damaged or destroyed by Viking raids in England rebuilt. On top of this, he used his vast wealth to refill the churches with artifacts that had been stolen and built new churches throughout his realm. He also continued to build up Christianity in Denmark. He ordered for a stone church to be built in the city of Roskilde, where his sister would act as the patron of the church. He also helped Roskilde become a bishopric. Knut was also ready to give lavish gifts to any church he felt met his approval. These gifts included the bones of English saints as well as crosses made of silver and gold. And those churches weren't just restricted to England. He is known to have sent gifts to a church in the French city of Chartres as well as the German city of Cologne. These gifts were really twofold in meaning. First was obviously to establish ties and working relationships between England and the other nations of Europe. However, Knut's gifts also helped show continental Europe that not all Scandinavians were pagan raiders looking to pillage monasteries. The bishop in Chartres, France, even recorded, "We were amazed at your faith. Since you, whom we have heard to be a pagan prince, we now know not only to be a Christian, but also a most generous donor to God's churches and servants." In 1027, after his affairs against the Norwegians and Swedes, Knut actually was able to attend the coronation of Holy Roman Emperor Conrad II on Easter Sunday in Rome. While there was technically nothing holy about the Holy Roman Emperor, the history of the position was very much tied to Christianity, what with Charlemagne as the first Holy Roman Emperor being crowned by the Pope. This would hold true for the later emperors too. Being able to attend this coronation ceremony was a big deal for the Christian leaders of Europe, and Knut was fully aware of this. While he said that he was technically in Rome to pray for forgiveness for his sins, Knut took advantage of the fact that he was able to have an audience with the Pope. Knut asked several things of the High Pontiff. First, he requested lowering the price for the vestments worn by the Archbishops of England. Second, he wanted to secure the power of the Archbishop of Canterbury over the role of the Christian churches in Scandinavia, a role that was at that time being contested with an archbishopric in Germany. Finally, Knut wished to make it easier and safer for pilgrims from England to make their trips to Rome. At the very least, the Pope agreed to this last demand. Knut also received a secondary boost to this goal from King Rudolf of Burgundy in France. When Holy Roman Emperor Conrad II was given his imperial parade in Rome, Knut was allowed to stay by his side, standing on the same pedestal, no less. This truly marked Knut's position as one of the major Christian kings of Europe of his time. It is then odd to think that Knut was actually a bit more lenient towards Norse paganism in his realms compared to other Scandinavian Christian kings. Olaf II of Norway had been a true hardliner for Christianity, punishing the pagans of his realm. However, Knut allowed bards to sing all about the Norse gods within his court. But maybe this goes to show that Knut was a man for religious tolerance. You kinda have to be when you rule over three previously separate nations, two of those only recently accepting the religion practiced by the third. So let's get down to the judgment of Knut of the North Sea Empire, shall we? I want to actually try my best to look at Knut's rule in a vacuum without comparing him to Alfred the Great. Then again, the only reason I did these two kings back to back was because their stories felt like a good part one and part two to bounce off of each other. Also, I did spend a bit of Alfred's judgment comparing him to the Irish king Brian Boru, who actually bridged the period of time between Alfred's rule and Canute's. What I'm trying to get at is clearly Canute's achievements need to stand on their own, but these are the two guys known as the Great who ruled over England, and of course there are going to be comparisons. Well, I think there's no denying that Canute very much succeeded in what he wanted to achieve. When England was taken away from him, he won it back. He seamlessly managed to add Denmark into his ruling territories. And when he finally decided to add in Norway too, he managed a quick and decisive coup. And his idea of how to insert himself, a Danish-born prince, into the workings of both England and Norway worked really well. Well, until it didn't with Norway. Knut knew that he had to get the locals on his side. He couldn't just sideline the population he was now ruling over. And, at least as far as England is concerned, he was able to fully protect the people he had made a vow to rule over, even if the invaders were people who were probably more like himself. And as far as his Christian side is concerned, Knut managed to put England on the map as an important Christian nation of the medieval era. I'm sure it's no small feat to befriend the Holy Roman Emperor on your first meeting with him. And on top of that, Knut was able to bargain with the Pope. But obviously, Knut also proved to Europe that Scandinavians weren't just northern pirates who hated the idea of God and Jesus. And unlike Alfred, Knut managed to complete his vision, at least as far as I'm aware. Maybe he also wanted to conquer Sweden and Iceland, but never got around to it before he died. Meanwhile, Alfred gave up half of his desired goal while paying off invaders. Weirdly enough, this whole judgment process is reminding me of my highest rated, were they great figure, Frederick the Great of Prussia. Both were men with lofty goals who seemed to know exactly how to go about achieving them, whether it needed to be through blood or friendship. Granted, Frederick's vision of the world managed to be much more influential to modern times than Canute's. The only thing I really want to nitpick here is how much of all this was Canute's actual desires. If Svein Forkbeard hadn't conquered all three nations beforehand, would Canute have thought to do so? Or would he simply have been fine ruling Denmark? How much of his father's goals are we able to push onto the son? Maybe that's not actually fair though. So it's finally time for the grade. All in all, Canute was an incredible leader. Definitely not without his faults, but a man worthy of his epithet. He was better at uniting England than Alfred, and maybe even managed to do things better than the latter could ever have dreamed. I think the fact that I compared him to Frederick the Great also says a lot. So with all that aside, King Canute of the North Sea Empire gets an A- on the Were They Great grading scale. Canute passed away in November of 1035, seemingly from natural causes due to illness. Though he had spent almost two decades cultivating a powerful empire in Northern Europe, ultimately he would live just long enough to see it start to fall apart. I couldn't find when exactly Svein Canute's son lost Norway, but I'm assuming it was before November of that year. And even after that, Canute's empire would not last much longer. His rule in England was succeeded by his son Harald, who passed away in 1040. His rule in Denmark was succeeded by his other son, Harthacnut. Harthacnut would be Harald's successor in England until he also passed away in 1042. When he had become king of Denmark, Harthacnut made an agreement with Magnus of Norway that the two nations would be joined, but only after one of them died. Unfortunately, Canute's son died first and Magnus succeeded him as the ruler of a combined Denmark and Norway. As far as England was concerned, it would actually fall back under the rule of Anglo-Saxon kings. The first king after Harthacnut was actually his half-brother and the son of King Æthelred, the very man Svein Forkbeard had unseated. In less than a decade after the death of its founding ruler, the North Sea Empire was no more. But who knows how the world might have turned out had it been able to last for even a few more rulers of Canute's bloodline. Maybe no one would have ruled as well as him, but it could have had massive implications for the modern workings of the UK, Denmark, and Norway. Anyways, I think it's pretty easy to see why people decided to latch on to figures like Alfred and Canute. Especially with that weird Viking trend that just completely engulfed the media during the 2010s. I haven't watched all of History Channel's Vikings, but I know Alfred plays into the later bit of that. However, I can recommend you the Netflix/BBC show The Last Kingdom that deals with the reign of Alfred. I actually just finished that show up with my partner very recently, and I can tell you, yes, it's a very good show. Also, if you like anime, Vinland Saga deals with the rise and reign of Canute and is equally as good. And well, I actually enjoyed playing Assassin's Creed Valhalla. I absolutely can't recommend it to you as a history tool. It's just not historically accurate. But Alfred is there, so that's something. So clearly, if you like the Viking Age in England, there's plenty there for you. But for now, that's it for this week's episode of Royally Screwed. I hope you enjoyed the journey. Be sure to subscribe to the show and tell a friend all about it. Next time, we're talking about a very famous historical figure that was a scourge to Central and Eastern Europe as well as the late Roman Empire, Attila the Hun. I hope you'll join me then for another topsy-turvy look into history's most interesting rulers.